Okay, ladies and gentlemen, then, Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs is seeking an administrative assistant commencing the 1st of November. This is our position. It really is an administrative position where we're asking somebody to help us maintain our web page, sometimes to assist here at the council meeting and act in support of some of the committees of the society. If you know of any person who might be interested in that, would you have them get in touch with me, please? Austin Fennell at 381-7834. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Austin. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, at Sven's. Also welcome back, our viewing audience at home. We're going to start the question period now. We have half an hour, so those of you with questions, I would like to remind you, of course, that this is Southern Alberta Council of Public Affairs, and the topic that we have been listening to is the diverse faces of employment. The presentation was delivered by Elma Ginto, who is the Executive Director of Flexibility Learning Systems. When you come up to ask your questions at this mic over here to my right, would you please remember to state your name, keep your comments brief, and limit yourself to one question. We do only have half an hour. Thank you.
Will this one work?
Yes,
whatever
you like.
My name is Van Christou. I enjoyed your presentation very much, Arma, but I think it's very timely, as we said at our table, that this matter of immigration is not going to go away. It's going to increase as time goes on over the next decade. So I think it's a very timely subject for us to be having at the Southern Alberta Council of Public Affairs. Thank you very much for being here today. One of the questions that come to mind is that I wonder, with these people coming here and having problems with knowing how long their permits will allow them to work here and so on, which must be very confusing for a lot of foreigners. Are we dealing mostly with provincial government or federal government or both, or how is that sorted out for them?
When you're speaking permits, are you speaking like work permits?
Yes,
or?
But they're wanting to stay in Canada for any length of time.
Okay, well, most of the people that we work with are permanent residents of Canada. So when they come here, all of their papers are in place and they're ready and able to go to work or to access a language program and find employment. We don't really work with the temporary foreign workers or the PNP a lot, because they're just sort of starting to come and they're so busy working, and so we haven't, and they have a job when they come here, so we don't really work with those. But the ones that we're working with are the ones that have all of their papers in place and they're ready to start looking for work.
Thank you.
Now, some of them waited 7 years to get all their papers to come here, you know. A lot of people from China, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, in order to get all those papers before they were accepted to come here to work or to live, yeah.
Austin Fennell, and thank you very much for your address today. You've got a wide range of interests and from what your remarks were. I have a question why some come to Lethbridge at all. In one of the groups of which I've been a part, we have done some sponsorship of immigrants and refugees and sometimes discover that they're here for a short time. And it appears often as if it is for social reasons that they leave. Their chances of making connections in why, if it's difficult even, for example, to put together a course of training for pharmacists or nurses or something like that, why are they coming to Lethbridge?
Well, that's a good question, yes. They're coming for a variety of reasons, and I usually ask them, too, why they're coming to Lethbridge. And there's kind of a difference between looking at refugees and looking at immigrants. What I was talking about primarily were the immigrants that were coming, the skilled workers that were coming. We have a group of refugees that are also coming. And the refugees that are coming to Lethbridge are often the ones that, for example, may have had a family member here, or they didn't really choose Lethbridge. but the government sent them here. They were a government-sponsored refugee, so they were sent to Lethbridge. And sometimes those people will move to some of the other centres because they're looking for members of their community. So they might then move to Calgary because they know there's a group of people from Iraq living there, or there's a group of Kurdish people living there. And so that does happen. I know that the federal government has also been looking at, maybe Sarah can confirm this for me, that they're trying to establish, you know, some of these ethnic communities in some of the other smaller centres as well. So that's why, for example, they're sending a large group of Afghan people to Lethbridge so that we can sort of start an Afghan community in Lethbridge. But certainly for social reasons, a lot of them are moving or coming here to Lethbridge. As far as some of the immigrants go, there's a couple of different reasons. Sometimes it is because they know somebody in Lethbridge. They've had a friend of a friend or a relative or somebody that has said, well, you know, they're in Lethbridge, come to Lethbridge. We've had others, though, do a lot of research. A lot of the people have done a lot of research, and they've looked at a lot of options. And then, based on all the research, for example, if they had anything to do with the agricultural field at all, they decided they're going to come to Lethbridge. Or somebody, you know, like I say, it might have just been somebody that they knew, somebody that they met, and they said, okay, go to Lethbridge, and they went to Lethbridge. But some of them actually do a lot of research when they come here. And if they're prepared, you know, there are some jobs that it's really difficult to get in Lethbridge. I mean, it's when you have a very specific narrow focus, yeah, sometimes you can't get that job you want here, and then they move on. But a lot of the others do stay, more so now than before. Before, it used to be there's no jobs in Lethbridge for me, so I must go to Calgary, I must go to Edmonton. But that certainly is changing now because there's lots of opportunities for them now. Did that answer your question?
Thank you.
Okay.
My name is Diane Pointer, and I really was impressed with your speech. My particular concern, however, is the temporary workers. I have heard horror stories about employers bringing groups of people into Alberta to work, treating them very badly, and you know, housing them in compounds or something. Anyway, I've heard some pretty awful stories. I wonder about these temporary workers. How is this being monitored? Who's looking out for them and seeing that they are being treated better than just indentured servants?
Actually, I really don't know a lot about the temporary worker situation. I know I've heard of situations where things have not been great, but I think there's a lot more monitoring going on now, Sarah. Yeah, there's a lot more federal monitoring going on right now, but I think certainly there still are cases where things are not great and things need to be improved on, yeah. But I don't have a lot of specific details on that. Sorry.
If I can just add one thing. I know this isn't protocol really, but Citizenship and Immigration Canada has just opened a temporary worker office in Calgary because there are increasing concerns about the way in which some of the workers are being treated, etc. And so there is going to be a lot more federal monitoring of that particular program. And that program is different from the PNP program, which is a provincially administered program. Okay.
My name is Henry Heinen. I have two questions, actually. One is there any involvement from the local churches, especially when it comes to refugees? And secondly, how about the social safety net versus, say, refugees? What do they all get or don't get compared to, say, a regular immigration situation?
Most of the refugees that we work with are government-assisted, are government-sponsored refugees. However, yes, there are a lot of local churches that are involved in sponsoring refugees as well. I think a lot of the church work that's being done now is to sponsor relatives of refugees who are now in Lethbridge. So a lot of that is going on. There are still churches involved. I mean, there was churches involved years ago with a lot of the Kosovo people that were coming, and they're still involved in a lot of in some of the sponsorships that are happening. The refugees, if they're government-sponsored refugees, they do have that 1 year of federal government assistance. And during that year of federal government assistance, they are expected to attend English classes or to look for employment. Now, it used to be that the Canadian government, when they chose refugees to come to Canada, they used to look at refugees that they thought would be able to settle fairly easily into our communities. That no longer is the policy. Now it's, you know, they're looking at the needs of refugees. They're looking at refugees who have been in refugee camps for years and years and years, 10 years, 15 years. And so they're now looking at refugees who are really in desperate need. And so these refugees, when they're coming over to Canada, yeah, they have a lot of needs. They have a lot of medical needs. They have a lot of, you know, language, education, all sorts of needs. And so their settlement, there's a lot of settlement issues involved. So if you look at the immigrants that are coming, if you look at the proportion of money that is spent on immigrants, a lot of it is spent on the settlement needs of refugees. And it is a challenge working with a lot of the refugees. When you have a year of government assistance, it can be a challenge to then move on to actually looking for employment, particularly if you haven't worked for a long time, particularly if you don't have a lot of education, you don't have great language skills, you're only allowed through the year of language skills and perhaps you're expected to look for work. We have, every month we work with probably about 10 students in our classes who have never ever been to school, never ever held a pencil. And so they have all sorts of challenges. And so, and yet, there are some great success stories too. I mean, we have a woman who's been in our English class a year. Still, you probably still could not carry on a conversation with her. She came with never having held a pencil in her life. I mean, she lived on a farm in the Sudan. She is now working 2 part-time jobs and doing very well. She doesn't speak a whole lot of English, but she can work in the restaurant. She can clean, you know, the tables, and she can assist with some of the dishwashing. And so there are a lot of success stories as well. But there certainly are some challenges with working with some of the refugees, yes.
Elmer, Trevor Page, thanks very much for your presentation. I really do believe that together with climate change, migration is one of the biggest problems that we face globally, or will be facing globally. In your talk, you identified that there is a disconnect. And it would seem to me that there's a disconnect on various levels. One, between the federal government, which sets the national policy in terms of immigration, both for economic migrants and refugees. Another, with the provincial government that places those refugees after they've been allocated to provinces. And then here we are in Lethbridge. Shortages of workers, carpenters, and mechanics you've identified, yet those that arrive are PhDs in many cases, or in some cases. So there are disconnects at various levels. And then there's the frustration that you've articulated in terms of a refugee or migrant when they can't get a job. Although I guess it's not really the job of flexibility to bring this problem to the various layers of government, I wonder whether you have done, municipal, provincial, and federal, and if so, what is their response? Thank you.
Well, yes, actually, Trevor, we have talked to various levels of government at various times. I mean, I sit on various committees, and I have been in various consultations. Some consultations, for example, that the provincial government has had, I've asked to be part of and have been told, you know, really, we're not interested in what you have to say. So we've had that as well. So, there is a lot of disconnect. And we continue to do what we can, but sometimes we are listened to and sometimes we are ignored, yeah. And so we just have to keep doing what we can, yeah.
Are you convinced they're aware of the problem?
I don't think they're all aware of the problem, no. And I think some of them don't want to be aware of the problem. And, yeah.
Good afternoon. I understand that yours is a private business. And therefore, when people come to you, they have to have some money to pay for the service. Can you help us how you operate and within the private, public, not-for-profit, for-profit sector? Thank you.
Okay. Well, I started out many years ago as an English as a second language teacher, and I was doing different kinds of programming, and then I decided that there were some programs that I would like to see being offered that weren't being offered, and so I started to create some of my own programs. And from creating these programs, it became necessary to have a structure to kind of house all these programs. And so at that point, I decided to start an English as a second language school. And then what I did then was I have a contract with the federal government, with CIC, to offer the LINK program, the language program. I have a contract with the provincial government, HRNE, to offer an employment program. And then we also do a work with international students that are coming as well. They are the fee-paying clients. But the language program is free for people who are coming to Canada. The employment program is also free for the people who are using it. So basically, we make no money. I mean, we just basically run the programs with these contracts that we have.
My name is Sylvia Campbell, and the last person who spoke to you was my husband, Gordon Campbell, who has for years told people that they should give their name. He's got feet of clay. My question is, I think a few years ago, the federal government changed the point system on immigrants to Canada. Maybe it's time to look at it again and to give more points for trades. I think levels of education get quite a weighting, don't they? If I remember, I don't have the details in my head anymore, but I gather that it was reviewed and changed sometime in the 80s, I think, or early 90s. How could we get the government to do something about that?
Well, I don't know. But yes, you're right. I mean, it's definitely weighted in terms of, the number of university degrees you have, the level of education that you have, definitely. And so this is where I think with the employers putting the pressure on the government saying these are the kinds of workers that we're needing, you know, hopefully eventually the government will respond to some of that. But that's what's happening exactly is perhaps we need to change those parameters, change that system. Yeah. I mean, my niece married a fellow from England, you know, and it's taken him 2 years to get his permanent residency here in Lethbridge, you know, and I'm going, wow. And he's an electrician. He still hasn't got his papers, but he's working on them, but it takes a long time, yeah.
Since there's nobody else at the mic, perhaps I may be permitted a second question. My name is John Christou. It seems to me from what's been said that one of the important things at the present time to face the problems of coping with these immigrants coming to Canada is a greater public awareness. And I think that that's one of the great functions that this particular council serves, is in getting across a message like this, where politicians won't react to this sort of need without having the public support. If the public knows nothing about it, there's no support there, and there isn't going to be any in the future. So this type of program, in my opinion, is extremely important. What Southern Alberta Council of Public Affairs is doing, and what you're doing, Alman, bringing this to us. I think that all of us do have a responsibility to contact our representatives and to let them know that this isn't some problem that's going to vanish sweep it under the carpet, that it's going to get greater, and that in order for our society, for our communities to flourish in the future, it's necessary to integrate these people comfortably. If the problem isn't handled, all that happens is you get a divisiveness within your community, which then continues to grow and to cause more costs and more problems in the future. So I think it is it's very relevant, the last question that Sylvia asked, that our politicians are made aware of this problem, and that we have facilities to help integrate these people both humanistically and comfortably to their advantage, and finally to our own in the future.
Yes, I agree, yes. Because if you look at the numbers, I believe that if you look at the shortages that the province is going to be experiencing, and if you looked at the number of Aboriginal people that could be included in the workforce, the number of older people that could be retained in the workforce, the number of immigrants that are coming into the country now, and if you put that together, the numbers are still not great enough at the moment to deal with the shortages that there are out there. So it is a big issue, yeah. Well, thank you so much for listening to my presentation, and if you have any further questions when we leave this place, please feel free to talk to me and ask me. Thank you. You've been a very good audience.